Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. You know, I'm an idiot because yesterday was our 200th episode and I saw it coming for a few days. I was like, ooh, episode 197, a few days until we celebrate 200, 198, 199, I recorded yesterday's episode and went to upload it and went, oh, look at that, it was episode 200, and I completely forgot to celebrate. So I suppose we'll celebrate today. We did 200 episodes. Well done, us. I cannot believe that I've done anything 200 days in a row, so I'm pretty proud of myself. And the podcast is growing. More and more people are subscribing every day. On the Podbean app, we've got about just shy of 300 followers. That's just through the Podbean thing. I don't know how many people are following through other subscription services like iTunes or whatever. But we're sitting just shy of about 300 listens per day. Which is really cool. Usually more like about 250 to 300 per day. There was a freak day 7 days ago now when we got 406 listens in a day. This isn't very interesting podcasting, by the way, me just boasting about my numbers, but it still just freaks me out. It spins my head out to think that 406 people listened to my stupid voice in the space of 24 hours. The world has gone berserk. So, congratulations. If you've listened to 200 episodes, well done. You've made it, it's further than halfway. We've got 165 days to go, if my maths is correct. All right, let's get into it. This is Book 10, Chapter 11. An hour later, Dunyusha came to tell the princess that Dron had come, and all the peasants had assembled at the barn by the princess's order and wished to have a word with their mistress. "But I never told them to come," said Princess Mary. "I only told Dron to let them have the grain." "Only for God's sake, princess dear, have them sent away and don't go out to them. It's all a trick," said Dunyusha. "And when Yakov Alpatych returns, let us get away, and please don't." "What is a trick?" asked Princess Mary in surprise. "I know it is. Only listen to me for God's sake. Ask Nurse, too. They say they don't agree to leave Bogachirovo as you ordered." "You're making some mistake. I never ordered them to go away," said Princess Mary. "Call Dronyushka." Dron came and confirmed Danyasha's words, and peasants had come by the princess's order. "But I never sent for them," declared the princess. "You must have given my message wrong. I only said that you were to give them the grain." Dron only sighed in reply. "If you order it, they will go away," said he. No, I'll go out to them," said Princess Mary. And in spite of the nurses and Dranyasha's protests, she went out into the porch, Dron, Dunyusha, the nurse, and Michael Ivanovich following her. "They probably think I'm offering them the grain to bribe them to remain here, while I myself go away, leaving them to the mercy of the French," thought Princess Mary. "I will offer them monthly rations and housing at our Moscow estate. I am sure Andrew would do even more in my place," she thought, as she went out in the twilight towards the crowd standing on the pasture by the barn. The men crowded closer together, stirred, and rapidly took off their hats. Princess Mary lowered her eyes and, tripping over her skirt, came close up to them. So many different eyes, old and young, were fixed on her, and there were so many different faces that she could not distinguish any of them, and feeling that she must speak to them all at once, did not know how to do it. But again, the sense that she represented her father and her brother gave her courage, and she boldly began her speech. "I am very glad you have come," she said, without raising her eyes and feeling her heart beating quickly and violently. "Dronyushka tells me that the war has ruined you." That is our common misfortune, and I shall grudge nothing to help you. I am myself going away because it is dangerous here. The enemy is near, because I am giving you everything, my friends, and I beg you to take everything, all our grain, so that you may not suffer want. And if you have been told that I am giving you the grain to keep you here, that is not true. On the contrary, I ask you to go with all your belongings to our estate near Moscow, and I promise you I will see to it, that there you shall want for nothing. You shall be given food and lodging. The princess stopped. Sighs were the only sound heard in the crowd. I am not doing this on my own account, she continued. I do it in the name of my dead father, who was a good master to you, and of my brother and his son. Again she paused. No one broke the silence. Ours is a common misfortune, and we will share it together. All that is mine is yours, she concluded, scanning the faces before her. All eyes were gazing at her with one and the same expression. She could not fathom whether it was curiosity, devotion, gratitude, or apprehension and distrust, but the expression on all the faces was identical. We are very thankful for your bounty, but it won't do for us to take the landlord's grain, said a voice at the back of the crowd. But why not? Asked the princess. No one replied, and Princess Mary, looking around the crowd, found that every eye she met now was immediately dropped. But why don't you want to take it? She asked again. No one answered. The silence began to oppress the princess, and she tried to catch someone's eye. Why don't you speak? She inquired of a very old man who stood just in front of her, leaning on a stick. If you think something more is wanted, tell me. I will do anything, said she, catching his eyes. But as if this angered him, he bent his head quite low and muttered, Why should we agree we don't want the grain? Why should we give up everything? We don't agree. Don't agree. We are sorry for you, but we are not willing. Go away yourself, alone, came from various sides of the crowd. And again all the faces in the crowd bore an identical expression, though now it was certainly not an expression of curiosity or gratitude, but of angry resolve. But you can't have understood me, said Princess Mary with a sad smile. Why don't you want to go? I promised to house and feed you, while here the enemy would ruin you. But her voice was drowned by the voices of the crowd. We're not willing. Let them ruin us. We won't take your grain. We don't agree. Again Prince Mary tried to catch someone's eye, but not a single eye in the crowd was turned to her. Evidently they were all trying to avoid her. She felt strange and awkward. Oh yes, an artful tale. Follow her into slavery. Pull down your houses and go into bondage. I dare say I'll give you grain indeed, she says. Voices in the crowd were heard saying. With drooping head, Princess Mary left the crowd and went back to the house, having repeated her order to Dron, to have the horses ready for her departure next morning. She went to her room and remained alone with her thoughts. All right, there we go, another chapter down. We've got Maya desperately trying to help the serfs and them flat out refusing her help. Bit of a mix-up here, it seems. I'm not sure what's happening, but I think there's been some propaganda from the French saying to the people of this area that they will actually be friendly to them, that they're going to be kind rulers. And it seems like the serfs have seen Maya's offer of food. Come with me, I'll feed you. Let's go away to Moscow where it's safe and I'll keep you safe there, as just a ploy to further enslave them. And I'm thinking, maybe they've heard of the French, liberating people. And I just had this weird epiphany, like this whole book I've had this weird thing, isn't it, in this book where the super rich and privileged in the book, the royals, all the characters in this book, are just a very, very small minority of the people of Russia at this time. They're the 1%, really. And the majority of the population of Russia were these serfs. Like the Rostovs own, I don't know how many, but lots of different estates, and all of them have farms and, you know, serfs out there working, harvesting for the Rostovs. It's almost like this massive network of slaves that are just run by different families and different royal families. And you kind of, it's this weird thing where you read it and you don't think of these characters as like the bad guys, and I still don't. But there's no regular people in this book. They're all mega rich, mega privileged. And the majority of the people in Russia at this time weren't that. So maybe these peasants or these serfs see the French invading and kind of welcome it and say, yeah, we want a revolution. Is that what's happening here? I'm not really sure, but it does seem like the serfs have seen Mayu's offer of food and shelter as just further solidifying their enslavement to her family. Still, you can see why it is frustrating for Maya, because she doesn't see it that way. To her, she's trying to save these people. She's trying to give them food because they're starving, and she's trying to give them refuge from the war because Napoleon is and his army, they're coming to ruin them, ruin their town, ruin their people. So she wants to get them out of there, and she wants to get them fed at the same time, and they're rejecting it and making her the enemy. So you can see why it's frustrating on both sides, and it must be especially frustrating for Maya. Who Was Once Delight said, so Andre freed his own serfs, but not the muzhiks at this estate. I was confused throughout the past couple of chapters because I somehow thought that they were staying at Andre's house. I guess that isn't the case. Yeah, it's confusing, isn't it? Because I thought the same thing. I think when they talk about, like, the estate, it's a big place with different different sections, I suppose. So different serfs. Like, Andre's home is on that estate, but it's such a big property that there's many, many homes on that estate. I think that's how it works, but I'm really not that sure either. It's pretty confusing. They were at Bald Hills, but that's not where Andre's house is it? Yeah, I don't know. I suppose what Maya should do is give them the grain and free them and say, here's the grain, eat it, and you're free to do whatever you want. Stay here, go to Moscow, it's up to you. And then they don't feel indebted to her. Not really sure about that either. I think this is a case of reading on will help us clarify what's going on. So I just want to end this episode by saying thanks to those who are sharing the podcast, who are talking about the podcast with friends or family or recommending it to people. It really goes a long way for me and for the growth of the podcast. Just if you're kind enough to, you know, recommend it to someone. So big thanks for that. And if you've shared the podcast on your social media page, thanks for that as well. We're seeing a lot of growth. So someone out there is talking about it, which is really cool. I'm aiming to have our bonus episode, Ask Tolstoy, recorded tomorrow, if not in the next 2 days. So if you've got any last-minute questions for Uncle Leo, drop them through to me and I'll answer them in that episode. I'll record it, probably within 24 hours of this episode going live-ish. So get your questions through. You can tweet me at Anderlouis, A-N-D-E-R-L-O-U-I-S, or comment through the A Year of War and Peace subreddit. All right, that's going to do us for today. Thanks very much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.